Welcome to the Major African American Writers Podcast. Thank you all for tuning in. I will be your host for today, Jonathan Xavier Simmons. And we're going to be talking about the celebrated writer that is Gloria Naylor. Gloria Naylor was born on January 25th, 1950, in New York, New York, just 6 weeks after her parents, Alberta and Roosevelt, moved from Robbinsville, Mississippi. They moved to escape the racially segregated South, and you can see the influence of her Southern background with her Northern upbringing in her work. Naylor was an avid reader and writer in her teenage years, graduating with honors from Andrew Jackson High School in the Bronx in 1968. Upon graduation, she went on a mission to North Carolina and Florida, as required by her Jehovah's Witness faith, and returned to New York City in 1975. Naylor enrolled in Medgar Evers College, where she studied nursing, but soon transferred to Brooklyn College, where she would major in English. Naylor's first published work appeared while she was still at Brooklyn College. It was an essay she had wrote called A Life on Beekman Place. It was published by Essence Magazine in November of 1979 and would later become a chapter in her highly acclaimed first novel, The Women of Brewster Place, which was completed in 1982. She then attended Yale University, where she received her master's degree in African American Studies. Her master's thesis, Lyndon Hills, became published in 1985. Naylor has taught writing and literature at a number of colleges, including George Washington University, New York University, Boston University, and Cornell University. Naylor died of a heart attack in the Virgin Islands on September 28, 2016, at the age of 66. She described herself as a feminist and a black cultural nationalist. "That means I'm militant about who and what I am as an African American," Naylor said. "I believe we should celebrate voraciously that which is yours. We need to celebrate the survival of culture among the underclass." She published a number of books, including Mama Day 1988, Bailey's Cafe 1992, 1996, Conversations with Gloria Naylor, The Haves and Have-Nots, Lyndon Hills, The Men of Brewster Place, and her most critically acclaimed work, The Women of Brewster Place, which came out in 1982. She also wrote plays and screenplays and founded an independent film company. Women of Brewster Place was named one of the top books of the 20th century. In 1982, it won a National Book Award and an American Book Award in the first novel category, was adapted into a 1984 film starring Oprah Winfrey. In 1989, it was adapted into a miniseries and got its own TV show in 1990. Brewster Place is a rotting tenement on a dead-end street, walled off from an unnamed city that feels kinda like Harlem. The raw fear, pain, anguish, despair, and hope of the seven women is palpable as they fight demons, make life-changing choices, and get tough breaks. Yet their communal strength allows them to become a family, albeit a dysfunctional one, who have only each other to rely on. The women are as much a product of their circumstances as they are the creators of their own situations. This is a story about pain, suffering, and resilience. The characters are flawed, yet most are triumphant. Importantly, Naylor's writing, which gave a voice to black women, has been described as a part of a new black cultural renaissance. Brewster Place is actually a book in seven stories. In each story, women are living in a world that has never been kind to them. They live on the wrong side of a wall that separates them from the prosperity in their community, a theme that resonates in today's socio-political climate. The actual women who live on Brewster Place are filled with hopes and dreams. When she herself was coming of age, Naylor says the dreams that were held out for her were dreams of self-actualization, of becoming her full self.
When I was coming of age, the dreams that were held out for me to attain were ones of self-actualization. They were not so much succeeding within the society as to succeed within one's own skin and to try to attain a sense of your own full humanity, because that was the fight in those years. You know, you were constantly being degraded wherever you looked. There were stereotypes about you, about your culture, about your social class. And so my parents always sort of reinforced in my sisters and I that you have to set your own standards of excellence. You have to strive to become a full person. It did not reach beyond the self into, let's say, attaining success within society, because it was sort of a given. If you can just first maintain your own humanity, reify your own personal worth, you then flow into the system as an entity.
Nearly all of the hopes and dreams of the women of Brewster Place are crushed or deferred. They're the personification of the Langston Hughes poem, Harlem, which goes something like this.
What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun? Or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat? Or crust and sugar over like a syrupy sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load. Or does it explode?
The women of Brewster Place are all of that. Not only do the deferred dreams of Brewster Place fester like a sore, they do, in fact, explode, landing a crushing blow to the fragile community they've managed to create. With their flaws fully exposed, Naylor describes in excruciating detail the choices, the breaks, and the life experiences of a community of black women who have been dealt a rough hand. Their dreams have dried up, crusted over, and exploded. These women are representative of the communal experience of black womanhood. Each woman has her own story that becomes part of Brewster Place's collective story. Naylor takes on the subordination of women and the marginalization of queers in the novel. Naylor writes, quote, "They were hard-edged, soft-centered, brutally demanding, easily pleased, these women of Brewster Place. They came, they went, they grew up and grew old beyond their years. Like an ebony phoenix, each in her own time and with her own season, had a story." End quote. These are the women of Brewster Place, and this is their story. Having lost a child, Maddie Michael serves as a surrogate mother for many of the women who live at Brewster Place. She fled her parents' home, lost her own, and has endured many hardships in her life. Yet, she's still a symbol of strength and tenacity. In spite of her experiences, Maddie Michael stands tall. She's the essence of the modern black woman, persevering in the face of adversity and lifting up those around her, no matter the difficulty of her own situation. Basil is her only son. She puts all of her hopes and dreams into him and moves out of a boarding house when a rat bites him. Then she uses her home to bail him out of jail, and he jumps bail, leaving her to foreclosure and a nightmare. Etta Mae Johnson is Maddie's childhood friend. She spends her time running from an intangible desire for love, purpose, and companionship. She bounces from one man to the next, trying to fulfill an unexplained void. She moves to Brewster Place looking for security and satisfaction, but instead finds more disappointment. It's only when she learns to appreciate the relationship she develops with Maddie that she discovers that sense of satisfaction and purpose that she's been looking for. Naylor reveals her transformation when she writes, quote, "She stopped straining when it suddenly came to her it wasn't important what song it was. Someone was waiting up for her." Just a few minutes earlier, Etta had begun to walk toward Brewster Place, feeling utterly alone and broken. Another man had disappointed her, and yet another dream of finding that long-sought-after sense of security vanished with him. Fortunately, a different form of comfort and security is waiting for her. It's the comfort and support that comes from decades of friendship and love, and in the end, that is what will support her. End quote. Melanie Kaswana Brown was raised in the affluent Linden Hills suburb. She drops out of college, changes her name, and moves to Brewster Place to fight for the class and culture revolution that she so fervently believes in. When she looks out of her sixth-floor Brewster Place window, she can see the tops of the trees of her old neighborhood. She called her mother, quote, a white man's nigger who's afraid of being black, end quote. But in a confrontation with her daughter about her decision to move to Brewster Place, Mrs. Brown lets her know, quote, I am alive because of proud people who never apologized for what they were, end quote. Her dreams for a revolution are thwarted as the people of Brewster Place are merely trying to survive. All Cora Lee ever wanted for Christmas each year was a new baby doll. She's obsessed with baby dolls and babies. The mother of multiple children, she begins to neglect her own kids once they're no longer infants. Lucilia Seal Turner is Ava's granddaughter. She has a daughter named Serena and a useless boyfriend who she loves despite his shortcomings. She is heartbroken after Serena accidentally kills herself while fighting with Seal about her dad's decision to leave them. She dreams of love from her boyfriend, daughter, and unborn child, but an unwanted abortion, abandonment by her boyfriend, and the death of her daughter crushes her own dreams. Lorraine is a faithful and loving partner, sensitive to the criticism heaped on her as she explores a relationship with her partner, Teresa. She is loyal, faithful, and loving, and tries to engage in her community in spite of harassment. She dreams of acceptance and of being in a place where she's treated no differently than anyone else, and she finds that in Ben. She reminds him of his own long-lost daughter. Their dreams will turn into nightmares with her rape and his death, and she will haunt the dreams of the other women of Brewster Place. The other half of the two, Teresa, is the exact opposite of her partner, Lorraine. She's shorter, darker, and more attractive, and has a tough exterior, but is hurt by all of the discrimination and prejudice that she and Lorraine endured. Ben is the first black person to live at Brewster Place. Drinking is his remedy to make up for a life filled with loss. Abandoned by his wife and daughter, Ben spends the rest of his life running from his own demons. He's the life in Brewster Place, and after his murder, the building is shuttered. In the last chapter of the book, Kaswana plans a block party to raise funds so the Brewster Place tenants can fight their absent landlord. The story takes a turn when Lorraine is raped by a group of boys and left for dead. When Ben discovers her lying on the ground, in a rage, she grabs a brick, throws it at him, and kills him. The block party is a healing, but the rain defers that healing. In the end, the women of Brewster Place carry the remnants of their dreams and the baggage of their experience with them. The tenement's walls have the odors of hope, despair, lust, and caring. Brewster Place is the dead end that happens when your dreams are trapped on the wrong side of a wall. It is the barrier to self-actualization that Naylor describes as the basic expectation during her own upbringing. Yet, the dreams of the women of Brewster Place are what keep them alive. Quote, they get up and pin those dreams to wet laundry hung out to dry. They're mixed with a pinch of salt and thrown into pots of soup, and they're diapered around babies. They ebb and flow, but never disappear. Dreams affirm and perpetuate the life of the street. Since the publication of The Women of Brewster Place, Naylor has been described as a brilliant cultural scribe and poetic historian of black life in America. In many ways, The Women of Brewster Place seems autobiographical. Naylor graduated from college at 25. The Women of Brewster Place was published the same month. In an interview with the literary publication Kalalu, Naylor says this book was the first thing she started and finished. She had a life of false starts and ways, a religion that she didn't finish, a marriage that ended, and there she was, putting herself through college and wondering if she was going to finish since her track record wasn't that good. So where is Brewster Place? It's anywhere where black women are gathered. In the end, the narrator says, quote, No one cries when the street dies. Colored daughters will still wake up with their dreams misted on the edge of a yawn.